We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Here's your host, Todd McKim.
Well, welcome to another edition of Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Another week as we head down the home stretch now, heading towards the back half of the schedule, obviously. Halloween's right around the corner. Thanksgiving. Well, let's not even think about stuff like that. Let's think more about the positive vibes in Cal football right now. A little bit later on, we'll hear from running back Vic Enwery, who rushed for over 100 yards in the big victory over Washington State last week. All right, Coach, first of all, congratulations on the win. I want to start defensively. Just a phenomenal job against a very, very potent offense that came in averaging almost 40 points a game. They didn't get an offensive touchdown, only one field goal. Your defensive coordinator, Tim DeGruyter, was named the defensive coach of the week nationally. So a recognition for your staff as well. What was the key defensively against what came in as one of the top passing offenses all of college football?
Well, first and foremost, I think a really good week of practice and prep. Obviously, the coaches did a phenomenal job of preparing the guys, and the guys took that to heart and went out and executed at a really high level. We made the plays when they came to us in terms of taking the ball away when we had our opportunities there, and then force the issue on the quarterback. Obviously, being able to get to him and put some pressure on him, sack him, get the negative plays was huge. So there was a lot of good things, a lot of really good individual efforts. One of the neat things about that game on defense was I think we played 28 different people and 26 guys registered some kind of a stat. So, defense, offense, special teams, it was a total team effort.
I thought one of the keys, obviously, taking the ball away seven times, five picks. Luke Falk had come into the game. I think he had only thrown two in the prior six games. Cameron Bynum has been just spectacular this season. He got his first two interceptions of the year. It kind of set the tone for your team because they tried to throw his way, and he totally denied him.
Yeah, he did a really good job. Cam's been playing really well all season, kind of a quiet guy, doesn't say a lot, but he's got a really bright future. Obviously, the two plays he made, I mean, those are earned takeaways, did a really nice job on the first one, coming off and playing his coverage just like he was taught, and then made the play, and then later in the game, he had his second one in the end zone there where he kind of cushioned the route and saw the ball come out and made a really nice play again. So both of those were a result of him executing his technique and then finishing the play, which is easier said than done. So
You had a couple of tip interceptions, too. And, you know, the ball goes up in the air and sometimes, you know, falls to the ground harmlessly for the offense. But at the same time, if your defense is flying around, you're going to get your fair share of those. And that was the case against Washington State.
Yeah, it definitely was. You know, it was one of those games where the ball did get tipped and was up in the air a lot. And we were able to make the plays. I mean, there's a few of them that, you know, sometimes those can go either way, but it's a credit to the guys for playing really hard and being in the right spots and having a chance to catch those tips and overthrows, because that's key in getting turnovers.
One of those guys that had a pick, Jordan Kanachik, is having a really good year after a little bit of a slow start because of some injuries. Had to come in and play a lot. Devontae Downs, unfortunately, now is lost for the season. But Jordan was named the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Week.
Yeah, Jordan played really well, obviously. You know, made a lot of tackles, you know, affected the quarterback, sacked the quarterback, got some negative plays, and then the interception that he made. I mean, just kind of really a credit to him for how he's prepared. And the more he's played, the better he's getting. And I just think his best football is still in front of him, and it was great to see him make those plays.
Vic and Wary getting more of the carries this week. Of course, Patrick Laird unable to play in this game. Trey Watson obviously gone for the season. Just looked like as the game went on, he was able to find some things. The offensive line was able to find some things. Finished with over 100 yards rushing. We're going to talk to him a little bit later on in the podcast, in the next segment. What's he bring to your offense?
Well, it was great to see Vic do that, and it's the best he's ran all year, and had the opportunities, and you know, as an offense, especially in the second half, running the football, being able to you know, convert on some third downs and keep us ahead of the chains. I think that was a huge part of the win. And you know, Vic running behind his pads. I mean, the touchdown he had, I think the guy hit him about the 3.5 yard line, and he carried him into the end zone. And then he had you know, the play right before the half where he's able to get out of bounds and give us a chance to run the last play right before half to get a touchdown. And then in the second half, pushing the pile. And really proud of Vic, because we needed him to do that, and he did, and he stepped up in a big way. And then, you know, the offensive line and the fullbacks and tight ends and receivers doing their part blocking, it was a big part of the game.
Yeah, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, Devontae Downs out for the season with a lower body injury. I mean, he was on pace to maybe be the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. He's having such a terrific year. It's really kind of sad to see his career, unfortunately, come to an end. What will you miss without him in the lineup now?
Well, you know, first and foremost, you just feel really bad for him. And it's hard, and he's put in so much time, and he practices extremely hard. He prepares. He really cares about the game. He cares about his teammates. So you feel for him. And it'll be a committee, you know. Devontae is a great player and did great things here, and we're fortunate to have him. And so it's going to be a committee of guys that step up, and that's an unfortunate part of the game. And so the other guys will have opportunities, and we'll just need everybody to you know, take it one notch up to help take some of the pressure off those guys that we need to play that position.
After the game, the fans who came out in the smoky conditions, and good for them. You know, the students, you know, rushed the field. We've seen this before in college athletics. Probably be some kind of a monetary fine coming down the pike, I would think. But you know, maybe that's worth it to get a victory over the number 8 team in the country. I guess if they storm the field after 12 victories, or at least 6 at home, means you've had a pretty good season. But your thoughts about, you know, the storming of the field? I mean, as a player, as a coach, I know I'm down on the field as well. You're getting bumped around and jocked around. A week ago at Washington State, you know, a player or two, you know, you're upset if you lost. Even if you win, you can get jostled around. Just your thoughts about, you know, what happened, and you know, just as far as a coach and a player, the safety of everybody on the field, including the fans, because they can get jostled around by people that are twice their size.
Yeah, well, you know, it's exciting that everybody at the end of the game there, you know, that's exciting. And I know our players appreciate it. I know our staff appreciates it, and that everybody's, you know, got that energy after the win. And so we want to give them more and more reasons to be excited and more reasons to come watch us play. And that's our job, is to make it a great environment and put up a great product on the field so more and more people want to come and watch. So nobody was – I don't think anybody on our team or our coaching staff was upset at that. You know, I think they love the energy and appreciate the people that came out and supported us.
Yeah, I don't think there's it's fun. We do see the other side as well, because there is a safety issue involved. We've seen this in basketball maybe a little bit more because the fans are closer you don't have much time to get out of the way. All right, let's talk about homecoming game this week against Arizona. Wow, a change of quarterback has really made a difference for Arizona. Khalil Tate, back-to-back Pac-12 Offensive Players of the Week. The last two games against Colorado and UCLA, he's got something like 859 yards of total offense in two games. Most of those running the football. I'm watching the game with UCLA the other night, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how in the world was this guy's the second string quarterback at Arizona? He is big. He's 6'2", 210. He can run, but he's throwing at 74% accuracy too, throwing the football. So this is a real challenge this week.
Yeah, he is a dynamic player. There's no doubt, and it'll be a great challenge for us on defense, because they do run the ball so effectively. He runs it, so you got to count everybody, and then he throws the ball very efficiently. So you know, they do a great job there, Coach Rodriguez and that style of offense, and they, you know, it's a different set of problems, different set of issues that they'll present to you. So gonna be, have to take a really good week of preparation on our part in terms of practicing and preparing and understanding the game plan and then going out and executing it. And he is yeah, he's definitely gave him a spark, and he's a very, very talented guy, and it'll be a good challenge.
What is different about Rich Rod's offense than maybe, say, an Oregon or some other teams that run that spread?
Yeah, everybody has their own wrinkles, and whether it's by formations or the pace they play, maybe the different types of runs, everybody kind of has inside zone, outside zone, and then what are their other plays that they use off of it? These guys will run some counter plays with the quarterback. They truly will treat him like a tailback in the run game, and the thing is he can also throw it, like you said, very effectively. So just a different set of challenges. And, like, you know, they're all really, really good coaches, and they know what they're doing. And so, again, it'll be a take a great week on our part to go out and be prepared to play Saturday.
And then when you look at them defensively, they've been a little bit like your team in that they have gotten the ability to turn the ball over. I think they've created 13 turnovers so far this year, 8 picks, 5 fumble recoveries. And for a team like Arizona that has the explosiveness offensively, that's something you can't do. You can't give them extra possessions.
Absolutely. And so protecting the ball on offense like last week will be huge for us. You know, when they have that type of offense, you know, you got to limit their possessions. And so it'll be a great challenge for our guys on offense. And Arizona does some different things on defense, and they will, you know, move up front, change their coverages up. So going to have to be on point offensively and up front in terms of handling all that. But, again, just a different challenge. You know, each week in this conference, I mean, there's always something new, and you can go from playing, you know, four wides and they're throwing it how many ever times to playing, you know, zone read and quarterback runs 1 week. And so it's a great challenge, exciting part of the Pac-12, and we just got to focus on having a great week.
You know, it was an interesting week in college football in that four of the top 10 teams in the polls were, quote, unquote, upset. After you did your post-game interview with Joe and Mike the other day, you said, well, that's just kind of college football. And I'm of the belief, and I'm getting more and more this way, that you really don't know what's going on until maybe the midway point. Because non-conference games, there's a lot of teams that face teams that just can't compete with them in the non-conference. And suddenly maybe they're 3-0. And if you start with a couple of, you know, relatively weak teams in the conference, suddenly maybe you're undefeated and you're whatever. Are there upsets in college football anymore? I mean, are there just so many good – other than somebody beating Alabama. Okay, if somebody beats Alabama, that's an upset in my mind. But other than that, are there really upsets?
Yeah, there's just so much parity. And the teams change over the course of the season, you know. For whatever reason, you know, the dynamics can change and injuries and all these things can happen. And so you really just got to focus, you know, day by day and week by week, because everybody has talent. Everybody has good coaches. So, you know, it's really just focusing on yourself and how do you prepare your team each week and give yourselves the best chance to win, knowing that everybody that you play has good players and good schemes. And so it's not maybe surprising, I know, to us as coaches, you know, when you hear about these things. I know for the fans, sometimes the rankings mean more to them at this time of year. And, you know, we talk about it all the time. The preseason, in-season rankings mean nothing. If we're talking about it in January, then it means something. So we just really try and keep it simple and focus on us and knowing that each opponent has really good skill, and it'll be a challenge every week.
It is, and Arizona's the challenge. This week on Homecoming, thanks for stopping by. We'll talk to you a little bit later on in the week for our pregame show as the Bears face the Arizona Wildcats. As we continue, we've decided to pull an audible instead of Vic and Wary, who we promised earlier in the podcast. Instead, we're going to go to the other side of the ball. Jordan Kanashik had a great game against Washington State and was named the National Defensive Player of the Week. We'll talk to Jordan as we continue on Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics.
All right, segment number two this week's Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. And joining us now is the Walter Camp Defensive Player of the Week, Jordan Kanashik, the Bears defeating Washington State. And Jordan had a phenomenal game, 11 tackles, a couple of sacks, forced a fumble, got a pick, had a quarterback hurry. Is there anything in the game statistically that you didn't do that you wanted to do?
I would have liked to, on that forced fumble, I would have liked to pick up the ball and take it to the house. That would have been nice, yeah. But no, I'm really happy that Garen got a score and we ended up getting points on the board. So it's good to share the success with my teammates.
Yeah, I know it was a night of great jubilation and success. I know with a little disappointment mixed in too, because Devontae Downs, who, I mean, he was on pace. I think a lot of us believed that he may be the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year, injured a knee, and he's gone for the season. But you and Garen and the rest of the guys, Evan Weber, you know, stepped it up big time. Your thoughts about, you know, losing Devontae and what he's meant to the team so far, and, you know, how you can maybe pick up where he left off?
It's rough losing somebody like that. And Devontae is a tremendous player, but he's also a great leader and a great teammate to everybody on the team. So when you lose, like, the bell cow of your defense, somebody who's had a phenomenal year, it's rough. And you know, I don't think anybody could really replace what Devontae has done for us. But as a defensive unit, we have to. Everybody else has to pick up a little bit and try to do what we can to make our presence felt on the field. And that's kind of that. It's tough, and I really feel for him. You know, he's one of my best friends on the team. And he works his tail off. So anytime you have something like that go on, you really feel for him. But I think he's going to bounce back, and he'll be good.
Yeah, hopefully he'll bounce back, be healthy and ready to go and get a chance to play at the next level, because he certainly played at such a high level so far this season. Jordan Kanashik joining us now, 6'3", 235, out of Sacramento, also American River College as well. Talk about, you know, what it means to the team to get a victory over the number 8 team in the country after the previous 3 weeks that have been really difficult.
Yeah, it's big. And I think whether it was the 18, number 8 team in the country, or if it was any opponent, I think getting a win under our belt was much needed after falling 3 consecutive games. So getting that win, especially in a dominant fashion like that, I think it gave us confidence moving forward, and we're going to be able to build on that. And we know that we're capable of doing great things as a team. So we're just going to approach it game by game. And this week we have a really good Arizona opponent, and we had a really good practice Monday and Tuesday, and I expect a great one today. So these practices put us in great shape for the game on Saturday.
I'm not sure in this conference if you could face two offenses that come at you in opposing styles like Washington State and then this week with Arizona. Washington State, they want to throw the football. I mean, they've run it occasionally, but they want to throw it most of the time. And now you come in with Arizona, and they want to run it most of the time. What's the difference, and how does it change your preparation?
Yeah, it is funny how you could have two teams in the conference like that who have completely different offenses. But, you know, our offense that we practice against every single day, they run the ball a lot. They throw the ball. So, you know, we're used to seeing these things. We've been practicing against our offense since the spring. So, you know, and we saw this against USC a little bit. And some of the other opponents who run the ball a lot. But I think we have a terrific game plan in hand, and I think that as long as we execute the game plan like we anticipate, then we'll be able to handle anything that Arizona throws at us.
You probably haven't seen to date this year, and I'm trying to remember you know, even last year, a quarterback like Khalil Tate, who is so fast. He's been pretty accurate throwing the football, too, at about 74%. But a running quarterback changes the numbers, changes kind of the equation for an offense and a defense. How do you try to keep track of him and not let him, you know, run like he has the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, he's a really good athlete. You know, he kind of reminds me of Lamar Jackson, the quarterback at Louisville, just from being a dual threat kind of guy and is able to pass the ball and run the ball. So when you have a quarterback like that, it's important as a defense just that everybody needs to trust each other and be gap sound. Everybody just do their job, and as long as we do that, then we should be able to contain him. You know, playing a good team like Arizona, we're gonna go through some adversity as a defense, just like every game. So it's just gonna be important for us to trust each other and play for each other and stick tight through the adversity and the tough times, and we'll go from there.
Speaking with Jordan Kanashik, California inside linebacker, the National Player of the Week, has it sunk in the course of a little over two and a half years, you've gone from a guy coming out of high school that did not get Division I offers, went to a junior college, and suddenly you're Defensive Player of the Week nationally. Is that sunk in?
Yeah, it feels good. I don't really know. It's a good honor, but like I said a few days ago, and like I told my teammates, everybody's really congratulating me, and I'm getting a lot of texts, but I'm just really happy that we're able to win, and we're able to get a win like this under our belt, because it's something that we needed moving forward. We needed the confidence back, and we needed the swagger that we had been missing the previous couple weeks. So I feel like this win really got us to have that confidence and that swagger back.
Let's go back a ways, and I always like to ask, you know, guys, you know, why did they pick the sport that they're currently participating in? And apparently for you, you've always been a football junkie, although the rest of your family, you know, even though football was interesting, nobody really played other than you. Why did football become so important to you?
Yeah, I've been playing since I was 6 years old, and ever since I started playing, I seem to be a really good football player. So my first play I ever played in football, I was a little mighty mite, and I got the ball, and I ran for a 60-yard touchdown. So
that'll keep your interest up.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just all I've ever known. And I've been extremely blessed and fortunate to have my family support me in the way that they do. And when you have a great support system like that, it enables you to really do what you love and be able to flourish. So, like I said, it's all I've ever known, and it's all I've ever done. So I love every aspect of it. I love practicing. I love training. I love watching film. I love the camaraderie you build with your teammates. And I think that the things that you get from football are unlike any other thing you could get in life.
Talk about training. What do you think is the most important factor in training? Is it, you know, weightlifting? Is it, you know, aerobic conditioning? Is it legs? Is it upper body strength? When you train, what are you trying to concentrate on?
I think it's a combination of everything, and I think that we have the best strength and conditioning staff in the country. It's led by Coach Becton, who just does a great job, just from little details to providing us with the best workouts that we could possibly get, and they do a phenomenal job keeping us ready. And in the spring and winter, we train hard, and even during the season, we're still training and doing everything we can to enable us to perform at the highest level we can on the field. So, I mean, legs, very important, speed, strength, everything I think is equally as important,
Well, you also have to be blessed with some hand-eye coordination, too. Now, maybe there are some positions on the team that's not as important as other positions, but in your case, you've shown some pretty good hands. You got three career picks. In fact, the last time we had you on the air was last year when you had the pick against Oregon in overtime to seal the victory over the Ducks. Then you come back this year up in Eugene, you get another pick at the end of the first half that led to the first score for the Bears, to make it 17-7 at the half. And then you got the pick this last week, too. I mean, it seems like all of your interceptions have really come at key times. I mean, is it just right place, right time, or right bounce, or whatever?
Yeah, I think it's just right place at the right time. I think it also goes back to my film study. Getting a great understanding of what the offense is doing is really important for me, and I feel like if I don't put myself in that position, then I would be I'd be selling myself short and selling my teammates short as well. So it's really important for me to get a good gist of what the offense is doing, so I could help my teammates around me by letting them know, you know, oh, they're gonna run this play, and just being in the right place at the right time also helps too. And when you have an opportunity to get a turnover, you don't want to miss it. You know, takeaways are huge, and our defensive coordinator, Coach DeRuiter, and the staff raves about takeaways. And from statistics, you could tell that when you get takeaways and you win the turnover margin, you put yourself in great position to win a lot of football games.
Well, there's no question about that. It's paid off big time. 7 turnovers against Washington State, 5 picks. Luke Falk had come into the game with just 2 in the previous 6 games, so a terrific job there. A final question, why do you wear number 59?
Number 59. You know, I love Luke Kuechly. He's my favorite linebacker in the NFL, and I feel like as a linebacker, if you could wear the number 59, and I don't think everybody could wear that number and make it look good, but I feel like if to wear number 59 and you play linebacker, it just means something to me, and I was number 59 at my junior college, and that was by choice, and I wanted to continue playing or wearing number 59 for my collegiate career.
Well, if Luke knew that you were wearing 59, he'd be proud of you, that's for sure, because you're playing like Luke is playing, who's one of the best linebackers in the National Football League right now. Also has his own commercial, too, so you never know. You keep wearing the number, maybe you'll not only get to play in the NFL, but follow him in the commercial world as well. Hey, Jordan, appreciate you taking the time. You're doing a terrific job. Stay healthy and have a good ball game this week against Arizona.
Thank you so much for having me.
Doing a great job. He goes from no scholarship offers to the defensive player of the year in the NorCal junior college ranks to the National Defensive Player of the Week in his efforts against Washington State. All right, when we come back, we'll talk a little cross country as we continue on Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. And welcome back to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, final segment. We're talking a little cross country, getting down to the meat of the schedule here with the Pac-12 championships coming up in about a week. Up at the University of Oregon, actually Springfield, Oregon, at the Springfield Country Club, and then the Western Regionals, followed by, hopefully, the NCAA Championships. And joining us now is cross-country coach Shayla Houlihan. Shayla, thanks for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Hey, before we talk about your teams, as part of the podcast, we'd like to give a little background information on the individuals we're talking to, not necessarily, you know, student-athletes and how they're performing. It also, a little background on yourself, because you're your cross-country coach for the Bears and men and women, actually second year. Talk about, you've got to work with 2 different teams, taking up your time, 2 different, kind of cultures of running and so forth. You know, how do you manage that?
Yeah, It's definitely a balance for sure. Especially, the men are running a 10K at the end of the season and the women are still sticking to a shorter distance in the 6K. So it is definitely a balance with that. But I would definitely say we're a giant family. So that helps personality wise. I think we're all very similar as far as the men and the women go. So that's kind of how I balance it. I think I can go from one gender to the other gender pretty easily because they are very similar personality-wise.
And then, obviously, you are a distance runner yourself, middle distance, long distances. And primarily, you were a steeplechaser. How did you get roped into running the steeplechase? Because that's, that and the 400 hurdles might be the two toughest races in track and field?
Yeah, I think I got roped into it because I wasn't very good at anything else. At that time, there weren't very many coaches that actually taught the steeplechase. And that's actually something I've done here at Cal, is I seek out athletes, and if they're pretty athletic, then I think they can make the transition to be able to run the steeplechase at a pretty high level. So I'm constantly looking for that in the recruiting process. I just taught myself how to run the steeplechase, and it was something that I always gravitated towards, just looking at it in high school and being able to go to some of the big invitational meets and see it. I always thought it was really cool. So I was going to naturally gravitate towards it anyways, but then in college I was a walk-on and I needed to find a place for myself. So that was the place that I found.
Well, that's a tough place to find yourself, but you were highly successful at Northern Iowa and certainly at Utah, participated in the Olympic trials as well. So you know what it's all about to run the steeplechase and how to coach it and how to make sure everybody gets over the barriers and over the water hurdle as well. So it's a challenging event, to say the least, and you were really good at it. All right, let's break down your teams a little bit. First of all, let's talk about the men. They were able to go to the NCAA championships. That's the big goal each and every year last year. Give us a little sense of where your team is right now.
Yeah, we just came back from Wisconsin. We had a little bit of a rough race, to be completely honest. You know, you kind of prepare for your rough events to be more during a practice, and I think it ended up to be during the race, unfortunately. So it wasn't so much of a reflection of where they're at, but just where the training's at. You know, we're kind of in a transitional phase where we're starting to do a lot of long, hard workouts at a faster pace. So we kind of did that the week before, and I think that ended up affecting them more than I would have liked it to for the race. But I think we're honestly set up really, really well moving forward, going into Pac-12s and regionals and nationals. This will be the third year in a row that we've made it to nationals, and it's something we've never done in program history. So we're really looking forward to that. I think I train the guys more towards the 10K, so we're going to fare really, really well when we get out on the course in Seattle at the regional meet. So we're really looking forward to that. We've done this the past 2 years, so it's nothing that's new to us, having to really lay it all out there at regional. So we'll be ready and prepared for that.
And the women, I know last year was frustrating because you were so close to making it to the NCAA championships. And if had done so, it would have been the first time that both the men and the women had made the NCAA championships in cross country in the same year. And you've got clearly one of the premier runners in the country, Beth Ann Knights. She was eighth at that meet you talked about at Wisconsin last week against, you know, many of the top programs in the country. Tell us a little bit about her development. She came out highly recruited out of high school, was a national, I think, record holder in the 2 mile, if I remember correctly. And it's been really consistent for your team the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's been great. She's been so consistent for us. And, you know, luckily she's only had one little bump in the road. So she's been just, so consistent. I think this year is the year that she makes that big jump and really, really puts herself in the front of, you know, regionals and nationals. That 10th spot at nationals, that's the highest place finisher for us ever in history. So, but yeah, she's definitely looking to make a big jump into the top of the top when it counts, you know, at nationals. And she's been a little disappointed in the past. She's not able to put it all together at the end.
Well, competition makes everybody better. It's nice to have people pushing you in practice, and that carries over to hopefully the races as well. Hey, before we talk about the Pac-12 championships, which is, I mean, clearly, you know, maybe just a step behind the NCAA championships and the regionals every year because the conference is just so good. And we'll talk about the depth of the conference in a minute. You know, a sad note, I know, for the cross-country program and for a lot of us that met this young man, but David Torrens, outstanding runner for Cal, an Olympian, representing the United States, passed away a while ago. And I know, everybody in the Cal track and field cross country program certainly felt that loss.
Yeah, absolutely. David was one of the first people to welcome me into the family here in the Bay Area when I moved here 6 years ago. I actually lived with him for probably a year or a little over that. He's the essence of what Cal track and field athletes should strive to be. He's just the essence of what we're striving to do every day and what we're striving to teach every day. So it was so unfortunate. It's really, really sad. We're still mourning that for sure.
And will be for a while, I'm sure. I remember we used to do a TV program called the Cal Sports Report for Comcast, and he was one of the first feature interviews that we did. And I remember sitting down on the infield at Edwards Stadium and chatting with him, and just so impressed with him. Obviously, he had the numbers from an athletic standpoint, but just as a great guy to talk to. And we all pass along condolences to his family and his friends as well. All right, let's talk about the Pac-12s. That's the next thing that's coming up on the docket. And the Pac-12 is renowned for its great runners over the years. The Pac-12 has won combined men and women more team and individual titles than any other conference in the country. And it, once again, it's loaded. First of all, let's talk with the women. You've got Oregon, after their performance this past week, moved to number one. Colorado was number one, moved down to three. But you've got Washington, Stanford, Utah, and congratulations to your program for the first time this year in the national rankings, coming in at number 28.
Yeah, thank you. So Pac-12 is crazy. You just said it right there. we're super excited, though, just to go in and see what we can do, mixing it up with the best teams in the country. It's awesome. It's exciting. Hey, who knows? We can go in there and, hopefully beat a Utah. That's my college post. Collegiate coach, so I love beating up on Utah.
Yeah, they're ranked just above you. They're number 27 and you're number 28, so here's your chance.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, and on the men's side, Colorado, you talk about a power. They won 5-6 straight, I guess, NCAA championships. So, but they're ranked number 5th, Stanford 6th, Oregon 8th. So there's 6 teams in the top 21, so that'll be a challenge as well. And the nice thing, for folks that don't have the opportunity, obviously, to drive up to Springfield, Oregon, but for the first time ever, the Pac-12 championships in cross country will be live on the Pac-12 network, streaming as well. So a great opportunity and great exposure for the cross country program on a national level to be seen on the Pac-12 network.
Yeah, we're excited for that. That's amazing that they were able to do that.
Well, hopefully they'll stay away from hole number, number 4. I used to play some golf up there at the Springfield Country Club. So that was never a good hole for me. So hopefully the race won't be around that area. They may find a few of the golf balls that I left there over the years.
We'll have to look out for it.
They probably won't be too hard to find. Hey, Shayla, thanks for being with us. Congratulations so far. Continued success. And good luck next week at the Pac-12 Championships.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You betcha. Shayla Houlihan, the cross-country coach for men and women here at Cal. Well, that wraps up this week's podcast. We appreciate you listening to us today. Of course, on Saturday, the football team in action against the Arizona Wildcats will be on the air, KGO, and the entire Cal football network beginning at 4 o'clock with the Toyota Tailgate Show. Until then, have a good week, everybody, and we'll talk to you Saturday night as the Bears face Arizona.
This has been Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, with your host, Todd McKim. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.